Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading today in digest form here on the Courage Handy Ham System, CQ Magazine. CQ Magazine is devoted to communications and technology. It's the December 2008 issue. The editor is Richard S. Mawson, W2VU. CQ Magazine is a publication of CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 New Bridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Our website is www.handyham.org. We begin our reading of the CQ Magazine for December 2008 with Zero Bias, a CQ editorial. It's by Richard Mawson, W2VU. The headline reads, "A New President, but no new sheriff." By the time you read this, we will have elected a new president of the United States. As I write this, though, the election is still a couple of weeks away, so the outcome is unknown to me. Personal political preferences aside, our main interest from a ham radio perspective is how the attitude of the new president will trickle down to the FCC. The commissioners, of course, come from both political parties and serve for set terms. They are not subject to replacement at the beginning of a new administration, as are the heads of most other government departments. But they are subject to peer pressure, ranging from the approaches of other regulatory agencies to the attitudes at the White House. From that perspective, we are hopeful for some positive changes regardless of who becomes our next president. Both Senator McCain and Senator Obama have spoken frequently of the need for greater transparency and greater accountability in government decision-making. Hopefully, both are serious about it, and hopefully, it will result in an FCC that is more focused on providing an even playing field for all players in a market that is promoting one specific approach to communications issues. I'm thinking, of course, of broadband over power lines, or BPL, which several FCC commissioners shamelessly promoted over and above other equally viable, often more viable, options for bringing broadband internet access to underserved areas. This rhetoric has cooled somewhat under the leadership of Chairman Kevin Martin, but the issue has not gone away, and the commission still has to come up with the revised BPL rules in accordance with the appeals court ruling handed down earlier this year, agreeing with the ARRL that the FCC had acted improperly in the way it enabled the original BPL rules. In addition, responding to the mess the economy is in right now, both candidates call for a return to tighter regulation of the financial industry and for stricter enforcement of rules already in the books. We hope that this attitude will carry over to the FCC as well, particularly with regard to amateur radio. Despite assurances that the Commission's dedication to enhance enforcement in the amateur service remains strong, even after the retirement this past July of Riley Hollingsworth, called K4ZDH as special counsel in charge of amateur enforcement, no successor has yet been named, and not a single amateur enforcement action has been announced since Sheriff Riley backed up his office. This is deeply disturbing and of grave concern. Our economy is suffering right now from the excesses of a regulate-yourself approach to the financial industry, but we hams learned a long time ago about the risks of that approach when it was applied to our service. For 15 years, from the mid-1980s to the late 1990s, the FCC basically told hams to, quoting, regulate yourselves, close quote, and the bends got progressively worse places to be, mostly due to the actions of a very few who continually got away with bad on-air behavior. when the new sheriff came to town about 10 years ago, we were promised that the overall attitude of the Commission on Enforcement had changed and that we would never again be left on our own to sort out problems whose solutions really require the authority of the federal government behind them. Indeed, over the past decade, with strong support from the amateur community, Sheriff Riley successfully cleaned up our bands. We are grateful for his work, but now worry it may all have been for naught. The Ham Bends are a much nicer neighborhood now than they were 10 years ago, mostly because the biggest bullies on the block have been silenced. But they'll stay silent only if they know they'll be accountable for their actions to more than the local official observer. The FCC often points to our long tradition of self-enforcement, and we hams do indeed have an enviable record in that regard. But self-enforcement is effective only for the 98% or so of us who need only broad guidance and or peer pressure to follow the rules. It's the other 2%, though, who can make life in a neighborhood difficult, and it is for them that we continue to need the FCC's help. It would be a tragedy and a travesty if the FCC were to go back on its promise to be there for us and allow amateur enforcement to once again drop off the radar. We call on Enforcement Bureau Chief Chris Monteith to name a successor to Riley Hollingsworth, to do so promptly, and to put the FCC back in the business of enforcing amateur service rules. It would be a nice Christmas present for us all, or at least for 98% of us. Ah, 'tis the season. Speaking of which, we hope that the tough economy isn't putting too much of a crimp in your holiday gift budgets. Our advertisers certainly need your business to make sure their holiday seasons are happy as well. All of us here at CQ wish all of you a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, and whatever other holiday you may observe at this time of year. May the light of your holiday observances shine brightly for the coming year. Signed, 73, W2VU. P.S. Be sure to check out our new Kids Corner column, debuting this month on page 80. Let's check out the news frontier, Hamp Radio News. KP5, the expedition okayed for early 2009. After 8 years of sometimes contentious negotiations, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has approved the Ham Radio de-expedition to Deshanto Island, which is prefix KP5, sometime in early 2009. According to the ARRL letter, the FWS chose among 7 competing proposals for the operation and okayed the plan put forth by veteran de-expeditioners Bob Alpin, called K4UEE, and Glenn Johnson, W0GJ. The operation is subject to several conditions relating to the island's current status as a national wildlife refuge and its former status as U.S. Air Force bombing range. No dates had been set as of press time. But Alpine said the operation was expected to take place somewhere between January 15 and March 30, and that the team would be given at least 30 days advance notice. Keep tuned to the CQE news list and other DX news sources for updated information. Richard Garriott, called W5KWQ, as active from the space station. Space tourist Richard Garriott, W5KWQ, was very active on the Ham Bends during his visit to the International Space Station, ISS, putting a particular focus on making contacts with school groups and participants in Scouting's annual Jamboree on the Air, JOTA, event in mid-October. In addition to making voice contacts, Garriott used the ISS Ham Station to beam slow-scan TV pictures from space to Earth. Garriott, a millionaire video game developer, is the son of former astronaut Owen Garriott, called W5LFL, the first ham radio operator to make contacts from space, almost exactly 25 years before his son's trip. Richard is a third-generation ham. His call was originally assigned to his grandfather, and he and his father are the first American father and son to fly in space. City of Manassas takes over BPL system. The broadband over power line BPL system in Manassas, Virginia, once the poster child for the supposed potential of the troubled system for internet access, has been taken over by the city after the private company running the system failed to, in a bid to sell it and pulled out, according to the ARRL letter. The Manassas system has been the subject of repeated complaints to the FCC about interference to ham radio and other radio services on the high-frequency HF bands. It was also visited by then-FCC Chairman Michael Powell just before the commission announced its controversial BPL rules. The citywide system had the potential to provide broadband service to some 12,000 residents and 2,500 businesses. At the time of the city takeover, it had just 675 customers. Manassas had to lay out over $100,000 to purchase the system, in addition to some $650,000 the city has already spent on infrastructure. Officials said they are keeping the system running both to maintain service to existing customers and because of the remote metering system it included, although the city is looking into other approaches for remote metering. Now, the next bit of informational news from CQ Magazine for December. Hams help in three rescues. Ham radio was a key element in three separate rescue operations in September and October, two at sea and one on land. Sailworld.com, that's sail-world.com, reported that a lone sailor traveling from San Diego to Hawaii lost his steering in a storm and was in danger of capsizing. The identified sailor activated his emergency beacon and made a distress call on his ham radio. Hams receiving the call notified the U.S. Coast Guard, which launched a search aircraft and used the automated Mutual Assistance Vessel Rescue, that's AMVER system, to locate the nearest participating ship, the container ship Vecchio Bridge. The ship's captain changed course and some 4 hours later brought his ship alongside the nearly capsized sailboat and rescued the sailor. A boater traveling from Hawaii to California also turned to ham radio when he ran out of fuel 100 miles off the California coast. According to the DailyBreeze.com, the also unidentified sailor used his ham rig to contact an amateur in Florida, who in turn notified the Coast Guard in California. A Coast Guard cutter rescued the boat and helped tow the vessel to shore. Back on land, Montana ham Bob Williams, called N70DM, was testing his rig in advance of a scheduled contact with his brother when he received the CW call from W7AU, Glenn Russell Ruby Jr., of Corvallis, Oregon. According to the ARRL letter, Ruby told Williams he was hiking in the Cascade Mountains and had fallen and broken his leg. An experienced backwoods hiker, Ruby had already set up his tent and gotten into warm clothes before calling for help on his portable Elcraft K1 transceiver. Ruby gave Williams his GPS coordinates and told him exactly whom to call for help. Williams contacted Snohomis County, Washington Search and Rescue, which dispatched a team that located and rescued Ruby. So, continuing ham radio news. Singapore to allow visiting hams to operate. Hams from around the world who visit Singapore may now apply for temporary licenses. The ARRL letter reports that the licenses, typically valid for 3 months, cost 50 Singapore dollars, or 25 Singapore dollars, for a VHF slant UHF only license. That's approximately $34 U.S. and $17 U.S., respectively, at exchange rates current at press time. Hams would sign the prefix 9VICTOR1 slant their home call. The Singapore Amateur Radio Transmitting Society recommends applying for the license at least 3 weeks prior to arrival. Information and forms are available online at the following website. I'm only going to give you the very first part of it, folks, because if you strung it all together, without exaggeration, it would be over 12 inches long. So let's try it this way. http://www.ida.gov.sg. Try that. www.ida.gov.sg/. You'll probably come up with the site and just have to fight your way through the licensing prompts, I guess. Let's pop one more in here for the news. APRS, Pioneer, injured in ballooning accident. Keith Spruill called WU2Z, co-developer of Windows and Macintosh versions of APRS, that's Automatic Position Reporting System, software, was critically injured October 11 in a ballooning accident in New Mexico. Keith is also a well-known balloon designer. According to various news reports, he and his co-pilot, Stephen Leschendero, were flying a balloon of Spruill's design at the annual Albuquerque Ballooning Festival when the craft hit a power line and burst into flames. Both Spruill and Leschendero jumped from an altitude of about 65 feet. Leschendero was killed in a fall, and Spruill suffered burns and multiple fractures. At press time, more than a week after the accident, the spokeswoman for the University of New Mexico Hospital told CQ magazine Spruill's condition remained critical. We certainly wish him well. Folks, while I'm on this page, I'm going to give you the announcements that CQ magazine deemed to be interesting and important for this particular month of the year. Beginning with the 75th anniversary of FM radio special event, the Major Edwin H. Armstrong Memorial Radio Club will operate special event station called W2XMN, that's Whiskey 2 X-Ray Mike November, and another W2XEA, W2 X-Ray Echo Alpha, December 13 and 14. From 1400 to 2200 Zulu to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the invention of FM radio by Armstrong in 1933. There are various frequencies, just scan around. For QSL, send self-addressed stamped envelope to Major E.H. Armstrong FM Association, P.O. Box 1584, P.O. Box 1584, Loxahatchee, Florida 33470. I'll spell that one for you because I've never seen that name before. Sorry, you Floridians. Loxahatchee. So if you make contact for the 75th anniversary FM radio special event, you could send it to P.O. Box 1584, Loxahatchee, Florida 33470. The annual Christmas greetings from Twin Christmas Cities. The Christmas City and Delaware Lehigh ARCs will have their annual special event station from Nazareth-Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, using the call sign Whiskey X-Ray 3 Mike Alpha Sierra, that's WX3MAS, on December 13 and 14 from 1400 to 0200 Zulu. They'll pop up all along the amateur bands. The certificate is available on request. You can QSL to CCARC/DLARC, the station WX3MAS, Greystone Building, Gracedale Complex, RR8, Nazareth, Pennsylvania, zip code 18064. A somewhat similar event is also being held by another special event station. Its call is KC50UR, Kilo Charlie 5, Oscar Uniform Romeo. The VCARA will activate that call sign from Belen, New Mexico, celebrating Christmas from Belen, Bethlehem, on December 18 through 23, from 2300 to 0200 Zulu, on various frequencies as well. If you want a QSL, you have to send an SASE to VCARA, P.O. Box 268, Peralta, P-E-R-A-L-T-A, New Mexico, N-M, zip code 87042. Folks, you'll remember a few minutes ago in the Zero Bias editorial by Rick Molson that CQ Magazine is beginning a new Kids Corner. Corner here is spelled K-O-R-N-E-R, Kids Corner. And he mentioned page 80. Well, knowing me and the readings I've done for years on the various ham radio magazines, I said to myself, I better pick this one up right away. Sometimes I'm flying along so quickly, my time frame elapses, and I didn't give you what I promised. And I love to talk about the young people in amateur radio, so I'll give them first position today. And their author, Brittany Decker, KB1OGL, Kilo Bravo 1, Oscar Golf Lima. Brittany Decker, Kids Corner. It's titled A Tale of Two Ham Families. First, an introductory commentary by the magazine. We are pleased to introduce our new youth column, Kids Corner, in this issue, as well as our new youth editor, Brittany Decker, KB1OGL. Brittany lives in Hudson, New Hampshire, with her parents and younger brother. She is 14 years old, has a general class license, and already holds an amateur radio leadership position as assistant section manager for youth in the ARRL New Hampshire section. She has previously written two articles for CQ. Welcome aboard, Brittany. Kids Corner is intended to be a column both about and for young people in ham radio. We want to hear from any of you about what young hams in your families are doing, and we'd especially like to hear from young hams themselves, not only about what they are doing in ham radio, but also about what they would like to see in this, their column. Kids Corner will appear quarterly in the March, June, September, and December issues of CQ. Those introductory comments were filed in here by Rich Mawson, the editor. A Tale of Two Young Hams. It seems the best way to increase the number of young people involved in amateur radio is to get their families involved. After all, no one likes to be the oddball out. Not only that, but with the whole family involved, everyone can help each other with exams. Even my own family has a new amateur addition. My mother just recently got her technician license. She is now KB1RGE. To get things started in our column, we'll look this month at A Tale of Two Families. Two ham families, that is. Subtitled, The American Ham Family. The Kerwin family of Hawthorne, New Jersey, is a four-ham family. Mom, Joanne, WB2IZA, and three children, Joseph, W2JRK, age 13, Matthew, W2MGK, age 12, and Ryan, W2RWK, age 10. They all agreed that their favorite aspect of ham radio is talking to people all over the world, or DX. Ryan adds that he likes how there are no limits to where in a world you can contact with ham radio. The father's place they contacted was California while participating in Kids Day, a contest dedicated to young amateur radio operators getting on the air. Among the boys' favorite places to contact have been Florida, Ohio, Texas, Rhode Island, and New York. They especially like talking to New York because they remember that back on September 11, 2001, ham radio emergency communicators got on the air when the planes hit the World Trade Center there. Joseph, Matthew, and Ryan learned about ham radio mainly because of their grandfather, Bill Condas, WA2JKY, who started doing ham radio with them a couple of years before they got their licenses. What got them hooked was how they could talk to anyone in the world, even if their favorite place to talk was as close as New Jersey or New York. However, their grandfather was not their only amateur influence. Their grandmother, Josephine, WB2EKV, their uncle, Andrew, WB2IYY, and their mother, Joanne, WB2IZA, all influenced the young operators to get into amateur radio. The grandparents first got their licenses when they were about the same age as the kids are now, and Joanne and Andrew also got their licenses at that same age. Their stories of when they were young amateur radio operators certainly inspired the kids to get their licenses as well. Even today, with the kids' grandparents having obtained their extra class licenses, and Joanne and Andrew having earned their general class licenses, Joseph, Matthew, and Ryan, all technicians, certainly have their family to look up to and get help with amateur radio. Joseph, Matthew, and Ryan got their licenses only a couple of years ago. Joseph got his when he was 11, Matthew when he was 10, and Ryan when he was 9. They have had great success in getting into amateur radio, getting their licenses, and staying interested and involved. When asked what advice they have to tell young people their age about amateur radio, they say that with amateur radio, you don't need to pay for phone bills like you have to do with cell phones. Matthew also said that they could talk to people all over the world, and with telephones, you cannot dial a number and hope it is a person in a DX country that is willing to talk to you. Joseph had already made some advancement in getting other young people into amateur radio by bringing a couple of his friends to his station during Kids' Day. He said that his friends really enjoyed the experience and especially loved the souvenirs they received on that day, QSL cards from the people they contacted. The previous story was about the Big Ham family in New Jersey. However, this trend is not limited to the United States. Our next story is about an ever-expanding Japanese ham family enjoying amateur radio through contesting and frequent de-expeditions. Now, about the Japanese ham family. Only 8 years old, with the U.S. technician class license and a glowing enthusiasm for ham radio, Yoshiki Nakada, called KH0UA, has just recently been welcomed into amateur radio. Yoshiki's mother and father both have their amateur radio licenses, with a father who is a very accomplished amateur radio operator, Kuniyoshi Kuni Nakada, holds 4 call signs, 7L1FPU, JG0VCM, W1FPU, and AH0BT. Yoshiki is very likely to also succeed in amateur radio. Yoshiki was first inspired to get involved in amateur radio by his father, Kuniyoshi. Kuniyoshi has obtained his first-class Japanese license and his United States extra-class license to boot. He started amateur radio when he was in high school and continued advancing through the Japanese license classes during college until amateur radio led him to steady antennas and radio wave propagation. His studies then helped him to decide to become a mobile phone system engineer. Yoshiki grew up listening to his father's QSOs on the radio. He first showed interest at the age of 3. However, when he finally got his license, he was still unable to get on the air. This is because Yoshiki was only able to study for the FCC technician license, as the Japanese kanji characters are very difficult to learn at Yoshiki's young age. That word is K-A-N-J-I. I'm sorry if I mispronounced it, folks. According to his dad, there are more than 2,000 kanji characters in Japanese, and elementary school children have not yet learned many of the characters that are used in the Japanese amateur radio license exam. Yoshiki had another problem. Kids in Japan don't start learning English in school until middle school, which is about age 13, according to his dad. So Yoshiki had to learn English from his parents before taking the FCC technician's exam. He does not have to study again for the Japanese licensing exam, though. His dad says the Japanese government accepts U.S. licenses for similar-level Japanese licenses. So Yoshiki's U.S. technician license will qualify him for a fourth-class Japanese license. Yoshiki's favorite amateur radio activity are contesting and satellites. These are also his father's favorite aspects of the hobby. Yoshiki enjoys contesting because it is, quoting, very enjoyable and very cool compared to playing Nintendo DS during the family's favorite contest, close quotation, the All-Asian DX contest, that's AADX. What he really enjoys during the AADX contest is his exchange, which is signal report and age. So Yoshiki gets to say 5908 to the station C contacts. While participating in the AADX contest, Yoshiki and his family go to the Northern Marianas Island, an American territory between Japan and Guam, which has the prefix Kilo Hotel Zero, KH0. The family travels to the Northern Marianas very frequently, more than twice a year. Yoshiki gets his motivation to study for his general class license from contesting on Northern Marianas. One day while on the island, he said, I do want to transmit below 15 meters. I want my general license. When asked about how to get young people into amateur radio, Yoshiki did not have any ideas. However, he does have 2 5-year-old twin brothers whom he will soon have to help study with their ham radio exams. Along with his parents, he will help make his ham family even bigger. Now, on page 82 of CQ, December 08, there's a great photograph here. Of course, Yoshiki is standing in the middle with members of the ARRL volunteer examiner team after the exam session at which he earned his U.S. ham license. The photo was submitted courtesy of Kuni Nakata, 7L1FPU. If I recall correctly, that's one of his dad's call signs. Let's continue with the Jamboree on the Air. Attention all scouts, what are you doing next year for the contest dedicated to you? No idea. Here are some. Jamboree on the Air, JOTA, is held each October to help scouts and guides around the world get in contact with each other over ham radio. The 2008 JOTA, held the weekend of October 18th and 19th, was the 51st annual event. Here are some activities that a few groups were planning. You might be able to get some ideas for your own JOTA activity next year, and it's never too early to start planning. Now, from Dave Lindsay, leader of Troop 212 in Fenton, Michigan, this will be our 10th consecutive JOTA. Since JOTA is so close to Halloween, we'd like to celebrate it in conjunction with a mystery trip. It has always been our custom to keep the weekend's activities, as well as the campsite and food, a mystery. Last year, the scouts were told to meet at a local church and were given a clue that started them on a 3-hour road rally, which ended up at a church camp, our campsite for the weekend. Once they arrived, the scouts found a box of miscellaneous food awaiting them, from which they had to develop a menu based on what they found in the box. Participating in JOTA and pumpkin carving were other highlights of the weekend. We have a custom troop QSL card that we send to all JOTA contacts and look forward to receiving other cards from around the world. Last year, we were able to make enough contacts to earn the Centenary of Scouting Award, United Kingdom-sponsored JOTA Award, as well as from the Baden-Powell Award from Brazil. Now, from Charlie London, KI4NCQ, Scoutmaster for Troop 575 and Old North State Council, Uwari District. At the Old North State Council's Uwari District, we are making JOTA the theme of our 2008 Fall Camboree. The Camboree is scheduled for JOTA weekend with lots of radio-related activities planned. There will be a tower building challenge, a launch a wire antenna as high as you can challenge, a build your own backpack antenna project, and many more. We have invited local ham operators to teach radio merit badge requirements and, most importantly, get as many scouts on the air as possible. My favorite part of JOTA is introducing amateur radio to scouts who just might become the Elmas of tomorrow. Now, here's one from Tanzania, East Africa, sent in by Hedon O. Richo. JOTA slant JOTI activities are marvelous in Tanzania, East Africa. We have been organizing it since 1980 under the call sign of 5 Hotel Zero Sierra Alpha, 5H0SA, then also 5 Hotel 3 Tango Sierra Alpha, that's 5H0SA. 3TSA, coordinator being myself with 2 other fellows. Again this year, we will be on here usually on the 15 and 20 meters bands, also in JOTI. That's a jamboree on the internet. I don't know how to operate on Echolink, but I'm working on it. The number of Boy and Girl Scouts expected to participate is increasing each year. Last year, it was 600. This year, we expect the number to double up to 1,200. Other activities include campfire, hiking, singing, sports, etc. You don't want to miss it. Now, Brittany concludes this article by saying, let's hear from you. What are you and young hams you know doing? What would you like to see in future columns? We're also interested in your ideas on what we might do with a website devoted to kids and radio. Please send your stories and ideas to me at the following. KB1OGL at CQ-amateur-radio.com. See you in March. 73 Brittany, call KB1OGL. Now, for the listener, there's a major piece here titled Results of the 2008 CQ Worldwide DX 160-meter Contest. The author is Andy Blank. His call is N2NT. It's a very lengthy article, ladies and gentlemen, and it goes probably 6-7 pages with all of the commercials on parts of each of those pages. So I can't give you the time on this recording in digest form for the Courage Handy Hemp system to get all the information on air. So if you are interested in that 2008 CQ Worldwide DX 160-meter contest, final information, it's really all here, starting on page 13. You can have someone help you with it, perhaps an Elmer, or perhaps if you're sight or print impaired, get someone to read it with you and for you. Continuing along now, there's also a major announcement about somewhat the same thing, but it's a little different context. The 2009 CQ DX Marathon. Special note here. 2008 logs due by January 31, 2009. It's time to start wrapping up your 2008 DX Marathon score. Even if you haven't been keeping track so far, you still have time to go back through your log and see what you've worked. Enter it on the DX Marathon spreadsheet and then update it with your additional context for the end of the year. You may have worked more countries and zones than you realize. At the very least, you will give yourself a goal to beat in 2009. Now, this particular submission indicates that Rule 5 in the main text has the details on that, where and how to submit your log. Remember, log submission deadline for the 2008 CQ DX Marathon is January 31st, 2009. Now, the fourth running of the CQ DX Marathon begins at 0 UTC. On January 1, 2009, and runs through 2359 UTC, Universal Time Constant, on December 31st of 2009. It starts at the minute with the year and ends with the minute at the end of the year. The goal, as always, is to work as many countries and CQ zones as possible, at least once during the calendar year. The only change from the 2008 rule is that the prohibition on assistance, such as lists and passes, for the unlimited class is deleted. In parentheses, the limitation remains in effect for the formula class. Close parentheses. Once again, we will use a downloadable Microsoft Excel template, which may be filled in and emailed to a special address as your log entry. Now, what follows are all the rules for the 2009 CQ DX Marathon. The rules and comments begin on page 26 and conclude on page 27. You know, as I rifle through the book, I might as well pick up the World of Ideas. This is the December issue of CQ Magazine for 2008. This information is filed in here by Dave Ingram, call K4TWJ. He titles it, It's Goody Time, starts on page 52. Happy holidays, friends. We thank you for all the encouragement and support during the past year or years and vow to bring you even more news and views of new delights, unique mobiles, amazing keys, hidden antennas, and tips for good HF enduring 2009. Stick with me, and together we will have a ball spending money and filling our shacks with heartwarming treats for blowout good hammond. The good times start right now, as we once again make our traditional December column diversion to highlight some neat and affordable rewards for surviving another year in the trenches. Remember, too, that our featured items are available from their producers and or dealers nationwide and not from me. I am simply your guide to this tour via printed page. Also, ordering items early is paramount to avoid shipping delays and sold-out dilemmas. However, you are not one to procrastinate when ham goodies are available, right? Monitoring world affairs. Small shortwave radios are always popular holiday gifts, especially if you enjoy listening to native music from distant lands and or monitoring direct from the source news broadcasts. Separating facts from fiction is occasionally challenging here and abroad, but comparing reports from various neutral and proven reliable sources such as Deutsche Welle, that's Germany, Radio Australia, etc., usually uncovers the facts. Considering the volatile state of many areas in the world today, including a pocket-sized shortwave radio and your usual array of travel or emergency items, is a good idea. Elanco's DJX7 is an excellent choice here. It measures only 4 inches high by 2.3 inches wide by just 0.5 inches in diameter or depth and receives AM and narrowband or wideband FM in a range of 100 kilohertz to 1300 megahertz with cellular blocked out from 824 to 850 and 870 to 895 megahertz. Such extensive frequency coverage allows the DJX7 to also serve as a pocket scanner for police, fire, NOAA, weather, and other public services, plus the amateur VHF and UHF bands. The DJX7 also has 1,000 memories, 5 scan modes, and super long battery life for big-time monitoring. Remember my little ham-fest buddy described in the August and October 2005 columns? Place it beside a DJX7 on AM mode, tuned to 7.040 megahertz, so it serves as a wireless BFO for the DJX7, and the combo also makes a unique QRP, sub-P transceiver, for traveling or ham-fest use. Elanco's DJX7 is available nationwide from amateur radio dealers such as Universal Radio of Ohio, a company well known for its full line of shortwave radios, amateur radio gear, accessories, and fair and square deals. You can reach Universal Radio at the following telephone number, 1-800-431-3939, or on the web, www.universal-radio.com. Now, regarding keys and mics, as many of our readers will remember, we traditionally spotlight a special Christmas key from Morse Express in his holiday column. Unfortunately, we must report that the producer of those keys, Guilmero Maestre Jenner, EA6YG, recently passed away. Morse Express owner Marshall M., call N1FM, expressed his sentiments and assumed the Christmas keys were history. And then a prototype replacement key arrived from world-famous key maker Toshikyo Yuchai, called JA7GHD, of GHD Telegraph Instruments. The 2008 key is rich chrome plating and pivots from a rear-mounted precision ball-bearing trunnion. It sports fine gap and tension adjustment space contact set in a ceramic insulator and has the GHD feel of a quality key. This little beauty is available from www.morsex.com. Now that's www.morsex.com, or you can call them at 1-877-368-3271. Now, the author also has a check out the new and all brass sideswiper or cootie, COOTIE keys, made by Tom Dusselniers, K4VIZ. Now, for sideband operators, you deserve an equal shot at holiday happiness. The Bob Heel K9EID operation has the perfect answer for his new PR20 and PR22 microphones. This magnificent little beauty has a wide response curve with a mild rise around 4,000 hertz to help you sound better on the air than you do in person. Just cable it to your rig, set the rig's transmit equalizer to boost highs and roll off lows, and discover newfound clarity and articulation for reaching out like a champ on single sideband. Bob debuted this new mic at the Huntsville, Alabama Hamfest in August, and its outstanding audio punch left generic mics in the dust. There is no question about it, friends. Heel mics are changing and improving the way we sound on single sideband, AM, and FM. The PR20 has a strong steel case and is supplied with a vinyl carrying case and three metal windscreens, black, gold, and stainless steel. A professional studio version, the PR22, is also available in a wide selection of pearlized colors. Check out both versions at www.heilsound.com. That's www.heilsound.com. And heilsound.com/PRO/. There's also commentary here about several items under $20. If you want to find out about that, you could look at page 56 of CQ December 2008. Now for travel mobile companion. If you spend much time traveling and visiting relatives, there's a good possibility you have an HF or dual band FM mobile rig in your car, unless you cart along a large DC power supply. This is also a high probability your after-arrival hamming ventures are rather limited. Ah, but there is an easy answer to acquiring all-day power. The new 1.5-pound 2-inch by 4-inch by 4-inch MFJ 4115 power supply, and it shows it here on photograph number 10. This tiny tank delivers 13.8 volts at 15 amps, which easily powers mobile rigs at up to 75 watts output. Carry along an easy up antenna for out-of-vehicle use, and you are an honorable goodwill ambassador for amateur radio. The MFJ 4115 is available at amateur radio dealers nationwide. Lest we forget a plug for the home team here, always great reads. We wrap up this year's holiday column with the gifts that keep on giving throughout the year. A subscription to CQ and or its sister publications, CQ VHF and Popular Communications. Each issue of these magazines is filled with details on can't live without items and timely information for getting maximum enjoyment from your hobby. Also, I'm offering autographed copies of my world-famous Collector's Pride, Keys 2 and Keys 3 books for $19 and $21 respectively, postage included, direct to your house from mine. And that commentary is from Dave Ingram, I-N-G-R-A-M. Dave's call is K4TWJ. His address, 3994 Longleaf Drive. Longleaf Drive, Gardendale, G-A-R-D-E-N-D-A-L-E, Gardendale, Alabama, A-L, zipper 35070. Gear up with some good gear and accessories, great reads, and enjoy plenty of on-the-air QSOs this winter and throughout the coming year. It's signed 73 Dave, K4TWJ. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that reading. I got a kick out of it, a lot of chuckles in my quiet mind here. Sometimes I express them on the audio, like right now. But my voice is beginning to crack, and I'm only 48 and 24 seconds into this recording, so maybe I better call Bob Heel really fast and see if he can furnish me a PR20 for reading purposes here on the Courage Handyham system. Now, as I'm looking through the magazine, I come upon VHF Plus. The author here is Joe Lynch, called N6CL. The headline article here is Pioneer Eris, Astronaut Son Follows Father into Space. Actually, we've already reported to you on that very early in this recording. But what caught my attention is a picture of Gordon West, called WB6NOA, with his 10 gigahertz station operating Maritime Mobile during the ARRL September 10 gigahertz and up cumulative contest. Gordon West has been a valued friend of the Courage Antietam system for quite a few years, coming frequently over the years to various camps that the Courage Antietam system sponsors for people that are either sight or otherwise impaired, and has been a valuable resource to all of the amateur radio community. Here's a piece on Gordo. It's headlined Fun on 10 Gigahertz, Gordo Style. The following, which describes his September maritime mobile activities during the September 10 Gigahertz ARRL and up cumulative weekend contest, is from Gordon West, WB6NOA. The 10 Gigahertz and up cumulative weekend contests provide microwave operators a fun opportunity to find their usually silent microwave bands wall-to-wall with activity. X-band equipment on 10 gigahertz is plentiful, and now 24 gigahertz and 47 gigahertz are heating up with activity. Almost all stations operate portable during these microwave contests in order to quickly relocate 10 miles and further to repeat qualifying contacts. On 10 gigahertz, it is not uncommon to hear QSO-DX reports of up to 400 miles away at 100 milliwatt power output levels, and up to 1,000 miles away for big stations with big dish antennas running 5 to 20 watts RF power into the antenna system. Almost every year, I try to operate from every 10-mile ocean subgrid, giving microwave contesters additional points from land. While operating microwave out on the Blue Pacific may seem like a dream of never having to physically relocate the actual equipment, the ocean voyage can be a nightmare. Our ocean-going equipment is a 1-meter dish featuring a cassegrain feed. Microwave energy enters the dish and is naturally focused on the circular plate at the end of the circular feed system, with the twice-reflected signal now entering the circular waveguide, which terminates into a rectangular flexible waveguide, entering the DB6NT transverter. The transverter outputs to a multi-mode Kenwood mobile single sideband at 2 meters with 10,368.1 down converted to 44.100 megahertz. Gary at SSB Electronics USA has worked in a 2.5-watt solid-state amplifier, so power output is modest with capabilities for the entire system to work off a 14-amp-per-hour gel cell battery replenished by a solar panel. On a Kenwood local oscillator, I had to bypass the 2-meter transceiver's power amplifier to minimize a power output spike that would quickly kill the transverter. Newer transverters from SSB Electronic USA may tolerate slightly higher input power levels, allowing the 2-meter LO to come from almost any 2-meter multimode transceiver with 1-watt output, or less, free of any power transient spike on key-up. A good test of our transceiver sensitivity and frequency stability of the system involves slowly motoring out of the harbor and listening to distant X-band mountaintop beacons. When we pass the radar reflector buoy in the harbor, aiming our dish at the buoy 180 degrees away from the transmitting beacon, traveling away from it at 4 knots, we heard a fascinating audio Doppler shift signal in addition to the main signal. It also gave us an opportunity to sweep the buoy and get a feel for how forgiving this relatively small dish was to being aimed not quite straight on. Well, out at sea, large ground swells from a distant Pacific storm gave us another opportunity to hear low elevation stations fading in and out as we went up and down within the swell trough. The stations that remained relatively steady perched high atop local Southern California mountains. It got to the point where we could almost tell the other stations how high off the water they were by how much fading there was in the big ground swells. The best boat DX was not on this trip, but a few years earlier working 10 gigahertz stations well into Mexico over 450 miles away. That was when I was only running 400 milliwatts. Every 10 miles, we would announce our new grid square location, announce the frequency we were monitoring, and it would be a pileup for about 20 minutes. George, called WA6RIK, assisted with logging, and Carol and Robert, called K1RDF, would keep us perfectly positioned at 10-mile intervals, constantly checking our position on GPS onboard charting software. Although we had the tripod and dish well secured by heavy lines, big gusts of wind made pointing the dish difficult, along with the 10 to 20 degree variation from our steering course. So, besides the rolling fades, we also had dish fades, as well as our overall floating platform changing course, creating even more fades. 10 gigahertz reflections off the ocean waters made up for all of the many fades we were encountering because of dish pointing, both horizontal as well as the ship's rolling, creating vertical fades. Yet the ocean waters would regularly reflect signals back into the dish, so DX out to 300 miles for reception was relatively common. The big mountaintop DX stations were mostly looking for long-range contacts, not necessarily maritime mobile, repeated grids every 10 miles. Our only real disappointment was pleading on the 70-centimeter FM liaison frequencies for a DX contact, but likely being ignored because we were simply too close or too common. If it don't seem that we're working anyone for a while, tune around the band, re-aim the dish, and look for an ongoing QSO. Comments, Mel, WA6JBD. Bring a compass and use it. I am careful about lining up the dish, and 99% of my contacts are aimed right where they are supposed to be. Adds Mel. If you're operating on an assigned frequency, it is not sacred. If someone wants to tail in a contact you just made, let them do it. If you tailed someone who worked folks on an assigned frequency, make sure it's clear. Otherwise, slide down 10 kilohertz and finish the contact, continues Mel, talking about the great operators during the two weekends of 10 gigahertz activity, where everybody on the band got along just fine. Finally, late in the afternoon, many of the contacts had a noticeable warble. At first, we suspected low voltage on our equipment, but voltage was fine. We then spotted why every signal had fluttered near headlands. Small ocean water ripples were a terrific multipath reflector of incoming 10 gigahertz signals. Next September, if you are looking for enhancement to 10 gigahertz propagation, consider setting up at the seashore or out on the boat and enjoy some surprising DX. Well, we thank Gordon West, call WB6NOA, for that commentary about fun on 10 gigahertz Gordo style. Folks, I'm going to end this commentary for the CQ magazine reading for December 2008 with actually an obituary commentary. It's headlined, Farewell to Pueblo Cortez, call I2UIY, Italy 2, Uniform Italy, Yankee. Tim Duffy, K3LR, described Pueblo as an angel. Bob Newman, W50V, often thought of Pueblo as one of his long-lost brothers. However, for all of us who knew him, Pueblo was simply our friend. With a heavy heart this month and special thanks to Rusty Epps, W60AT, for the following tribute, we bid farewell to the great contester and a wonderful man, Pueblo Cortez, I2UIY. Pueblo became a silent key on October 12, 2008. He suffered a brain aneurysm in mid-September that paralyzed the right side of his body and left him in a coma until the time of his death. With Pueblo's passing, amateur radio has lost another of its great men. Well, folks, this is Bob, N1BLF. This brings me pretty much up to time for the December 2008 reading of CQ Magazine. CQ Magazine is a publication of CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 New Bridge Road, Hicksville, New York, zip code 11801. The editor is Richard Mawson, call W2VU, and the publisher is Richard A. Ross, K2MGA. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams can be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. That's spelled lowercase H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, one word, handyham@courage.org. Website, www.handyham.org. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH geographic location is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. If you'd like to comment to me, criticize, or otherwise, I'd be delighted to hear from you via email. My email is my call sign, N1BLF@comcast.net. Have a great holiday season and a very happy new year till we meet again.